Are you lonely? It's no secret that one of the many hard parts of the coronavirus pandemic is staying at home. It helps stop the spread of COVID-19, but it can make us really lonely. It turns out that loneliness was of growing concern in the U.S. even before now, and it can affect not just our mental health, but also our physical health. It's the focus of research by Dr. Vivek Murthy, the former Surgeon General of the United States under President Obama. Before becoming Surgeon General, Dr. Murthy completed his internal medicine residency at Brigham and Women's Hospital and later joined Harvard Medical School as faculty in internal medicine. He is out with a new book called Together, The Health Power of Human Connection in a Sometimes Lonely World. And Dr. Murthy joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Tiziana. It's good to be with you.
So I just want to start by asking you, how are you?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm doing okay. I'm with my wife and our two kids and my mother, father, sister, brother-in-law, and grandmother, all under one roof in Miami, Florida, where I grew up. So it's been good to be with family, but each day is completely chaotic between trying to do work calls and potty train our two-year-old and get our three-year-old to actually eat his meals.
Now, did you all come together by choice when this pandemic started, or did it happen that you were all together beforehand anyway?
Well, my wife and kids and I, we all live in Washington, D.C., but we just happened to be coming down to visit our family in Miami after my grandmother fell and fractured her hip. And it was happening at the time when things were shutting down. So we just decided to stay here. We thought, even though we're not back at home where all our things are and where work is, it's better to be with family during a time like this.
I ask, you know, because your research is on loneliness and the choice to be able to be together at a time like this feels pretty timely given the work you've been doing.
Well, it is. And it was a conscious decision we made because we've come to realize in our own lives just how powerful and important social connection is. We also recognize how privileged we are to have the option of coming down and spending time with our family here while we're going through this quarantine period. But we are deeply grateful for it. And while being all under one roof comes with a share of complications, we are deeply grateful for the connections that we're able to experience now.
Now, you'd been thinking about loneliness before this pandemic. It actually started your desire to pursue this when you became Surgeon General. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so, you know, when I was practicing at Brigham and Women's Hospital, if you had told me that, Tiziana, you and I would be here talking about loneliness, I would have been skeptical. Because the truth is that even though I had experienced loneliness in my own life as a child and then later as an adult, even though I had seen loneliness so often in the lives of the patients that I cared for, I hadn't realized just how common it was, but also how consequential it is for our health. And that's something I came to learn when I was Surgeon General, when I had the great privilege of going around the country and visiting people in their homes and in town halls and community centers. And again, behind the stories of addiction and violence and depression that I heard were these stories of loneliness, where people would say, you know, I feel I have to carry all these burdens on my own, or I feel if I disappear tomorrow, nobody would even notice, or I feel invisible. And I came to understand that not only did the research confirm that loneliness was exceedingly common, with more adults in America struggling with loneliness than adults who have diabetes or smoke, but it was also consequential for our mental and physical health, increasing our risk for depression, anxiety, heart disease, and even premature death.
You know, I think to listeners at first blush, this next question might sound like inside baseball, but I think it's actually pretty important. You're very clear that there is a difference between solitude, isolation, and loneliness. Can you talk about that?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked, Tiziana, because it's an important distinction. Loneliness is a subjective feeling. It is not determined by the number of people you have around you. And in that way, it contrasts with isolation, which is a more objective term describing how many people are around us. When you understand that, you start to recognize why people can feel lonely, even if they're surrounded by 100 people. It's why freshmen and college campuses can sometimes feel lonely, even though they're surrounded by students. What matters in terms of whether we feel lonely or not is how we feel about the connections with people around us. If we feel we can show up as ourselves, if we feel like we're accepted and embraced for who we are, then we may only have one or two people around us, but we won't feel lonely at all. On the other hand, if we're in a crowd, but we don't have somebody who gets us, we can't really be ourselves, then that can be a very, very lonely experience.
And why are we here in this country getting more lonely?
Well, one of the reasons I think we struggle so much with loneliness, not just in our country, but in so many countries in the modern industrialized world, I think has to do with a few factors. You know, one is we are certainly more mobile than we've ever been. And while that has extraordinary benefits, it also moves us away from communities that we grow up with and that we come to know and love. The other second factor has to do with how we use technology. You know, technology in and of itself is a tool. And if used right, it can actually help connect us more deeply to other people. But I worry that the way in which we're using technology now is, number one, edging out our in-person interactions as we spend more and more time in front of screens and on social media. I also worry that it is diluting the quality of our in-person interactions and phone calls, because we now multitask and we are checking our email or refreshing our social media feed or Googling questions that pop into our head just while we're catching up with friends. But there's also a more insidious piece here, which is how it impacts our self-esteem, particularly the self-esteem of our children. And what social media has done is it has taken a culture of comparison that has existed for years and has put that into hyperdrive. And so when so many of our kids are on social media, what they're doing is they're comparing their average days to other people's best days, you know, as evidenced by their beautifully crafted photos and posts on social media. They're also being sent messages at an accelerated rate compared to what it was like when I was growing up, messages that tell them that they're not thin enough or good looking enough or popular enough or smart enough. And over time, that erosion of a self-esteem can also actually make it harder to interact with other people and to show up authentically as yourself, which in turn has an effect of effectively cutting us off from other people, of negatively impacting our relationships. So when you put these together, I think what you see is that the way in which you're using tech and our mobility, as well as a certain cultural norm that I worry about, a norm that tells us that our worth as human beings is connected to our ability to acquire wealth, power, and fame, that ends up being really destructive for both young people and adults. And we now have so many young people who I met when I was on the road who just feel like they're not enough and who don't feel worthy of connecting with others. And that's a recipe for loneliness.
Yeah. And that is heartbreaking. So, you know, as I hear you saying all that, I just sort of frantically want to say, okay, so what do we do? How do we stop that?
Yeah, well, you know, I began this journey to write this book, right, because I wanted to write about loneliness. But what I found was that I was really fascinated by social connection, because that's the other side of the coin. And what is deeply inspiring to me about this, and why I think this is ultimately an optimistic story, is because I think our true nature is to connect with each other. You know, the effort to build a connected life is not a mission to transform us into something that we're not. It's a quest to return us to who we are fundamentally, which is beings that were designed to connect with each other, to support each other. We are truly interdependent, and we've been that way for thousands of years. And the advances that we've made in modern society have perhaps given us the illusion that we don't need each other because we can order everything we want from the comfort of our couch. But the reality is we still rely deeply on relationships. And the good news also that I've found is that there are small things that can make a big difference in helping us connect more deeply. For example, simply taking 15 minutes a day to reach out to people we love can be a powerful way to strengthen connection in our life. Simply focusing on the quality of our interactions with people, even if we don't take in a single additional minute with them, something we can do by reducing distraction, that can have a powerful effect on how we feel about the interactions we have. And looking for ways to serve, recognizing that service is one of the most powerful antidotes to loneliness that I have found in all of my research, that also can be an opportunity for us to strengthen connection. And in a moment like this, keep in mind, there are many opportunities to serve because there are many people who are hurting. even though it may not always look like it on the outside, all of our lives have been turned upside down. So whether you check on a neighbor to see if they're doing okay, or have food delivered to a friend who may be struggling to telework and homeschool their kids, or offer to virtually babysit for even 10 or 15 minutes so that your friend can have a moment to sit down and just take a deep breath. These are all simple but powerful acts of service that can help deepen our connection with others. All of this, when I look at it, Tiziana, I'm reminded that connection is within our grasp, that living a connected life, even though it may feel that we have drifted far from that, is something that we can achieve and something that we desperately need to move toward now more than ever. If COVID-19 has revealed anything, it's shown us that we deeply need each other, that our fates are intertwined. And this is our opportunity to step back and take stock of our lives, to reprioritize and recommit to the relationships that we have, and to build the people-centered life and the people-centered world that all of us richly deserve.
You know, you mentioned COVID-19 a couple of times in that answer, and I do want to come back to it because you were a former Surgeon General of the United States. And so I do want to ask you, how do you feel we're doing at the federal level in responding to the virus?
Well, this is an extraordinary challenge that we haven't seen in over a century. And what does give me hope is I have seen people make extraordinary sacrifices that are actually working in order to reduce the peak of infections. And those are the very difficult to observe and costly but important stay-at-home measures that so many people across the country are observing. I'm also encouraged by the new innovations that we're seeing in testing, which are slowly but surely moving us toward a time when we can have rapid tests that will deliver results at home. And we're also seeing unprecedented collaboration around vaccine development, which is going to be essential because the vaccine is the key to us ultimately being able to resume a normal life. But I do worry about some elements of our federal response. I think we are still in a difficult place. We're not seeing the reduction that we need in infections across the country. And we are seeing many states open up prematurely before they've met the necessary benchmarks. We're also seeing, I think, a failure to really get testing at the level and with the distribution that's required if we want to open up safely. You know, whether you want to open up a school safely, a sports team, a workplace, we know that testing is going to be an important part of this. And there's still far too many people who struggle with testing. And finally, even with protective equipment, you know, one of the places where we recognize that we fell short in the response was in making sure our nurses and doctors had protective equipment that they needed on the front lines. I worry that if we have a second surge in the fall, which seems increasingly likely, that we aren't still prepared all across the country in terms of having health systems that are ready to surge and to accept that surge of patients safely without putting nurses and doctors and respiratory therapists at risk. So we have more to do as a country. We have more to prepare. And this is going to be a long battle, so to speak. So I have faith in the people in our country for doing what they're doing. I would like to see our leaders step up more to meet this moment and to do right by people who are making big sacrifices to protect their communities.
That's Dr. Vivek Murthy, who served as the nation's 19th Surgeon General from 2014 until 2017. His new book is Together, The Healing Power of Human Connection in a Sometimes Lonely World. I appreciate you sharing your research and your lessons with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tiziana. It's good to be with you.